Greetings, Earth Explorers. Welcome to X Squared Radio, where the past meets the future. I'm your host, Brooks. In here, the results are always positive. We explore the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. Whether you are driving across the country or listening on the web while you're working on your favorite project, you are about to learn more about who we are, why we are here, and what we may become than you thought possible. We might go a little past your imagination, but have no fear. You will be safely traveling with us. Keep your arms inside the vehicle, recline your chair, and look out the window as we launch X Squared Radio. And welcome, Earth Explorers all over the world. Welcome to X Squared Radio. I am your host, Brooks Agnew. We're coming to you live from the frozen wastelands of the north today. The solar wind is holding at 390.4 kilometers per second. Sunspot 1043 is holding on. We may see flares from these sunspots this year, so make sure you have a backup plan to your cell phone. 28 earthquakes in the last 24 hours, with only four being over 5.0. However, there were 1,200 quakes picked up in Yellowstone in the last couple of days. Now, this is pretty significant because I'm going to read you a short article here. Cheyenne, Wyoming. Yellowstone National Park is shaking again, but jitters seem few so far. Over 8 days, more than 1,270, mostly tiny earthquakes, have struck between Old Faithful and West Yellowstone. The strongest dozen or so have ranged between multitudes 3.0 and 3.8. That's strong enough to feel, barely. The vast majority have been too weak to be felt even nearby. Likewise, online chatter about an imminent volcanic eruption in Yellowstone hasn't even really picked up compared with the attention that a similar quake swarm drew just over a year ago. Perhaps we have done a better job in the past year or so helping the public understand that earthquake swarms are not unusual in Yellowstone, park spokesman Al Nash said Monday. The largest quakes in the current swarm have included two of magnitude 3.1 and one of magnitude 3.0 late Sunday and early Monday, according to the University of Utah, which helps monitor seismic activity in Yellowstone. Those who felt some of the recent quakes include Tim Townsend, law enforcement ranger at Old Faithful. Most haven't even been alarming, he said, although one last week had me running for cover for sure. One of the world's largest volcanoes slumbers at the core of Yellowstone. The volcano last had a cauldron-forming eruption 640,000 years ago and last spewed lava 70,000 years ago. Geologists say Yellowstone could erupt again, although the probability of an eruption within anyone's lifetime is extremely low. Unless, of course, you've read The Ark of Millions of Years, then I would be selling my property in western Nebraska. That hasn't discouraged speculation. One website during last year's swarm carried a Yellowstone warning urging everyone to flee the Yellowstone area, saying there was a risk of poisonous volcanic gases venting from the earth. Others have tied the Yellowstone volcano to the end of the world in 2012, as some people fancifully interpret the ancient Mayan calendar to predict. Relatively mundane fault slippage is believed to be causing the latest quakes, and Jamie Farrell, a researcher at the University of Utah in Salt Lake City. Not that the swarm isn't interesting to geologists, quite the opposite. It gives us the opportunity to maybe get a better idea of what the processes are that are causing the earthquakes we're seeing, Farrell said. Hopefully each time we get one of these, we can maybe get a little better idea of what's going on down there. Yeah, it seems like one of these days those quakes are going to be 5.0, 6.0, 7.0, and then it's going to be too late. It's just going to rock and roll. High energy bursts of gamma rays typically occur far out in space, perhaps near black holes or other high energy cosmic phenomenon. So imagine scientists' surprise in the mid-1990s when they found these powerful gamma ray flashes happening right here on Earth, in the skies, overhead. They're called terrestrial gamma ray flashes, or TGFs, and very little is known about them. They seem to have a connection with lightning, but TGFs themselves, something entirely, in fact, says Doug Rowland of NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center, before the 1990s, nobody knew they even existed, and yet they're the most potent natural particle accelerators on Earth. Individual particles in a TGF acquire a huge amount of energy, sometimes in excess of 20 mega electron volts. In contrast, the colorful auroras that light up the skies at night and altitudes are powered by particles with less than 1,000th as much energy. At this stage, there are more questions about TGFs than answers. What causes these high energy flashes? Do they help trigger lightning, or does lightning trigger them? Could they be responsible for some of the high energy particles in the Van Allen radiation belts that can damage satellites? These are all good questions. I can tell you, when you're flying at very high altitude, 50,000 feet or above, you often see lightning coming out of the tops of those thunderheads that we see from the ground, only the lightning has a very different kind of composition. We call them sprites and jets, and they can emit gamma radiation. The moon was so bright recently because it was a perigee moon, the part of the moon's orbit closest to the Earth. This favorable geometry made the moon appear 14% wider and 30% brighter than lesser moons of 2010. So just in case you thought we were closer to the moon, we were. Hopefully lots of people got married. Regulators shut down a big bank in California on Friday, along with two banks in Georgia and one each in Florida, Minnesota, and Washington. That brought to 15 the number of bank failures so far in 2010. By the way, today is the last day of January 2010, a top 140 shuttered last year in the punishing economic climate. Banks have been especially hurt by failed real estate loans, both residential and commercial. Banks that had lent to seemingly solid businesses are suffering losses as buildings sit vacant. As development projects collapse, builders are defaulting on their loans. Even in the face of these events, banks still refuse to loan to small business and insist on loaning only on real estate. You'd think somebody would get the message. Global cooling is quickly becoming the new mantra of environmentalists. We look for a public statement from Al Gore announcing something like this. Look, I know we've been talking about global warming. Actually, we meant global cooling. My bad. Anyway, keep sending money, and we'll be sending out new bumper stickers within 36 months. Thank you. Thank you very much. God bless America. Just to go along with that, I want to let you know that maybe not so recently, there was a fire at Los Alamos, and it has had one significant consequence. A secret scientific document was discovered in a bunker whose security systems were mostly destroyed by the fire. Now, this document was leaked to the public last weekend. Actually, it reveals nothing we didn't already suspect, but it does show that besides arsenic, lead, mercury, radon, strontium, and plutonium, one more extremely deadly and pervasive element is known to exist. Before we do that, let's see if we can't get another connection to to the web. It just will take a quick second. Those of you that are listening to the archive, hang in there. We'll be right back. Don't go away.
Houston, we have a problem.
State your problem.
Picking up transmission from Mars.
Wow, that was cool. I wasn't ready for that. you know, in the world of internet radio, we make connections from all over the planet. We coming live to you from the frozen wastelands of the north, where it is too cold to sustain human life, but we're safe inside a man-made structure, which allows me to sit in more comfortable clothing and be able to broadcast to you live. So there's been a small blank in the audio. Don't worry about a thing. We didn't miss any content whatsoever. We talked about a more extremely deadly and pervasive element known to exist from a fire in Los Alamos. This startling new discovery has been tentatively named governmentium, but kept top secret for over 50 years. The new element has no protons or electrons, thus having an atomic number of zero. It does, however, have one neutron, 125 deputy neutrons, 75 supervisory neutrons, and 111 team leader neutrons, giving it an atomic mass of 312. These 312 particles are held together by a force called morons that are surrounded by vast quantities of lepton-like materials called pions. Since it has no electrons, governmentium is inert. However, it can be detected as it impedes every reaction with which it comes into contact. According to the discoverers, a minute amount of governmentium causes one reaction to take over 4 days to complete, when it would normally take less than a second. Governmentium has a normal half-life of approximately 3 years. It does not decay, but instead undergoes a reorganization in which a portion of the deputy neutrons, supervisory neutrons, and team leader neutrons exchange places. In fact, governmentium mass will actually increase over time, since with each reorganization, some of the morons inevitably become neutrons, forming new isotopes. This characteristic of moron promotion leads some scientists to speculate that governmentium is formed whenever morons reach a certain quantity in concentration. This hypothetical quantity is referred to as the critical morass. Now, I have had a few of you write in and say, oh, tell me more about the government. Mentium, I couldn't find it on the periodic table. Don't worry about it. It's not going to show up in the periodic table. It's just one of those things that we like to throw on for humor. So even though we have a scientific program here, we don't have a non-sense of humor. We did have a guest tonight. We had Lanaya Lee scheduled to come on. And we were going to talk about her book, Skulls of Salvation. Unfortunately, she's had a slight health problem and is not going to be able to show up tonight. So what we're going to do is we're going to continue with open lines. So any of you that want to call in, get things started, we're definitely going to have a rockin' time tonight. Keep in mind that we're here because you're here. And if it wasn't for you, there'd be no expert. 5 years, and we're still in the top 1 or 2% here at X Squared Radio. We appreciate you being here. We'll be back in 40 seconds with more X Squared Radio. Don't go away. Explorers, we are going to disconnect one more time and see if we can't get a better connection here. Don't go away. Hang in there. Those of you that are listening on the web, it'll be a small gap, and we'll be right back. Don't go away.
Tog and love, BBS Radio, Tog and love, BBS.
State your problem.
Picking up transmission from Mars.
We're glad you're here with us on X Squared Radio tonight. We're live, coming to you from the frozen wastelands of the north. It's about 180 degrees below zero up here. No life whatsoever outside. I think I did see a penguin go by just a little while ago with a polar bear close behind. Those of you that are around the ice line, which is Interstate 40, be careful out there. A lot going on in the weather. Must be the global cooling. Some interesting thoughts about that, though. You know, NASA is very concerned about this. There is a NASA mission. NASA is to embark on one of its most ambitious missions in an attempt to unlock the secrets of the sun. Following its launch in 9 days' time, the U.S. Space Agency's Solar Dynamics Observatory, also acronymically known as the SDO, will spend 5 years in orbit trying to discover the causes of extreme solar activity, such as sunspots and solar winds and flares. Scientists have long been aware that the disturbances on the sun can trigger dangerous X-rays, charged particles, and magnetic fields that can disrupt power supplies, communication signals, and aircraft navigation systems on Earth. Hence the reason they got the money in the first place, disrupting those pesky military navigation systems. By understanding how much solar phenomena are created, they hope to be able to produce reliable forecasts of space weather and provide advanced warnings of any threat. Orbiting the Earth at a distance of 22,300 miles, which those of you in the genre will know, if you're familiar with the art, that's a geosynchronous satellite. The observatory will measure fluctuations in the sun's ultraviolet output, map magnetic fields, and photograph its surface and atmosphere. Experts have likened the mission to a giant microscope that will capture for the first time every nuance of the sun's exterior. The images relayed to Earth will be 10 times clearer than high-definition television, Barbara Thompson, project scientist, said. It is NASA's first weather mission, and it aims to characterize everything on the sun that can impact on the Earth and near Earth. We know things happen on the sun which affect spacecraft, communications, and radio signals. If we can understand the underlying causes of what is happening, then we can turn this information into forecasts. Gee, I hope they do better than the forecast we're dealing with now. It was actually supposed to be bikini weather up here today, but as you can see, you can freeze motor oil in your hand outside. The key thing about the mission is that it is not just pure science for its own sake. There is likely to be a direct and immediate benefit for people. That is to say, if they release the information to the public, that would be really nice. Or maybe a live feed to spaceweather.com, that would be great. Solar magnetic storms and space weather disturbances have had a number of dramatic consequences over the years. On March 13, 1989, millions of people in Canada and the United States were left without electricity for more than 9 hours after a magnetic storm sent shockwaves through the Hydro-Quebec power grid. 5 years later, a geomagnetic storm temporarily knocked out two Canadian satellites, an IntelSat-K, an international communications satellite, the most powerful solar storm in history, known as a superstorm, occurred on September 1, 1859. It caused the failure of telegraph systems in Europe and North America. And telegraph systems are all long-wire stuff, so short-wire stuff like printed circuits, integrated circuits, EEPROMs, those wonderful things that make your cell phones work, are all very susceptible to this kind of radiation. The storm produced auroras, phenomenon normally only seen near the poles, which were visible in Cuba, Mexico, and Italy. The lights were so bright in California's Rocky Mountains that gold prospectors mistook them for dawn and began preparing breakfast. Transpolar aircraft are particularly sensitive to space weather because they rely on navigation systems for the entire duration of a flight. Those of you that have flown to and from Europe or Japan fly this route. You fly very far north, utilize the rotation of the Earth, and then fly south to minimize fuel. NASA estimates that the SDO will transmit as much as 50 times more scientific data than any other mission in the space agency's history. Each image will consist of more than 16 megapixels, and the amount of data sent back to Earth daily will be equivalent to downloading 500,000 songs a day from the Internet. In order to process the data, the organization has set up a pair of dedicated radio antenna near Las Cruces, New Mexico. The SDO's orbit will match the speed of the rotation of the Earth, meaning it will be in constant view of the two 59-foot dishes throughout the mission. The UK-based Science and Technology Facilities Council is supplying some of the equipment for the observatory. Professor Richard Harrison of the Rutherford Appleton Laboratory in Oxfordshire said understanding the impact of the sun's magnetic fields was key to the mission. The idea is to image different layers of the sun's atmosphere all the way down to the surface and measure magnetic fields. The bottom line is that you are trying to understand how this atmosphere works. We can already see phenomenon like flares. The question is, how does the magnetic field form to allow this sort of thing to happen? All great questions, and leads to a better understanding of our environment, which does include the sun. The interesting thing about this, these magnetic fields often cause very powerful magnetic disturbances which result in particles striking our upper atmosphere, creating cloud cover. And we don't really know if these are the nucleus for cloud cover or if this high cloud cover is linked to global cooling. But right now, we're in a period of very, very low sunspot activity, which means that the magnetic fields have been very stable and thus able to block space radiation as it comes into our atmosphere. The phone lines are open all night tonight because our guest did not show up, and so we're relying upon you to bring us up to date. What's going on out there? What have you seen? Any UFOs? Any special amazing activities that we need to know about? Some things are not covered on the radio because the public never gets it to the radio hosts. Well, this is your chance tonight. Anything that you've seen or observed unusual out there, you can bring it to us. The phone number live, 415-762-1161, 415-762-1161. We can accommodate a lot of callers. Also, a new feature for PBS Radio, really leading edge. If you don't have access to a computer, but you do have access to a cell phone, and you have unlimited minutes, like many of us do nowadays, you can tune in to X Squared Radio via your cell phone. Just hang your Bluetooth on your ear. You will not be able to speak anyway. You'll just be able to listen. The phone number, you want to put this in your phone, put it on speed dial, like number 8 or number 9, down there on your dial or your pad, 712-432-0075, 712-432-0075, and when you access the conference line, you'll be asked to put in a code. It's very simple, 318116, 318116 pound, 3181 16 pound. And then you'll be able to listen to X Squared Radio while you are walking around. So all of that leading edge breaking scientific news that affects the way you plan your life, you can do that just by connecting by cell phone. One of the remarkable things that we have seen in archaeology, probably since the mid 1800s, I think the very first one of these was discovered in 1736 during an expedition in France. The interesting thing, the interesting anomaly is called the crystal skulls. We'll talk a little bit about the phenomenon this first hour, the anomaly of the crystal skulls. Now, I'm sure you've seen an occasional History Channel special or a Discovery Channel special where they've talked about the Mitchell skull or the Max, the crystal skull, or some of the other ones, the more amazing ones, can weigh up to 30 pounds. And I'm sure you didn't miss the movie Indiana Jones and the crystal skull movie. No crystal skulls, like with the elongated rear part of the skull, have ever really been discovered, except in television and except in feature films. The interesting things are about the skulls is that they appear to be machined out of solid blocks of crystal. And that's pretty amazing, because given the date that these things apparently were made, they did not have the kind of machine tools it takes to make crystal this fine and this smooth. Now, the Mitchell skull has actually undergone scanning electron microscopy. This is where they discovered there were, in fact, machine marks on the skull. And by the way, the unique thing about the Mitchell skull is it has a moving jawbone that's attached to it. The teeth are very well detailed. Some of the skulls have a hole drilled right through the top of it, down through the top to the bottom. Others do not have this. There are many ideas about what the skulls mean, who made them, why are they so spread out all over the world. Some say that there are 13 skulls. Some say that there are 52 sets of 13 skulls, or 28 sets of 13 skulls, or 4 sets of 13 skulls. And that since we know quartz does hold and possess a resonant frequency, that these skulls may in fact contain information. They may in fact contain programs of one sort or another. Some hold that souls are actually downloaded into the crystal skulls to be discovered in the latter days and then released so that the information that they know can be shared with the world. Don't know what language that would be in. Some have observed that even though the skulls have been found in the Yucatan, in Mexico, in France, in Romania, in North Africa, they all pretty much look the same. And that is to say, they look like human skulls. They're not ape heads, they're not cavemen heads, even though some of these purportedly go back, oh, maybe 30,000 years. Some of them only go back 500 years. Some of them were made in the mid-1800s. Still, the machine work is rather amazing. And although many have said these are impossible to make, there have been extremely talented artisans over time that have been able to craft these skulls. There are some pretty peculiar things that happen, though, when these skulls are exposed to human consciousness, or they are exposed to electricity, or they're exposed to magnetic fields. I know John Riley at the Zero Point Research Labs in Santa Monica, California, fairly regularly has Max the Crystal Skull and its caretaker over to his lab. They place the skull on top of a device John calls consciousness, which generates about 4 million volts, and it is all DC power, so it's highly polar. And what happens is the skull begins to sing, not a song, but it begins to make a tone that you can hear with your ears. And the interesting thing is, as you near it, as you get closer to it, or as you extend your hand toward it, it changes pitch. This is one of the interesting anomalies that occurs along with these gatherings, these groups of individuals who come to see Max the Crystal Skull, testifying of very strange downloads, healings, awakenings, and even ascension experiences associated with this energy and with these skulls. I don't know what to say about that. I haven't experienced it myself. I've handled two different crystal skulls, rather small. One was green, one was kind of opaque. But I'm fascinated by the quality of the workmanship on these skulls. And those of you that have ever done any work in electronics, one of the first projects that you do is you build a crystal radio. And that doesn't run on anything except the vibration, the resonant frequency of the crystal, a coil of wire where you tune the inductance on one side of the crystal in order to tune in an AM station, the radio wave itself that you're picking up being the power source. It's kind of interesting. Doesn't put out a lot of sound, but you can put one of those little earbud speakers in your ear, and you can, in fact, pick up radio stations as long as they're AM, amplitude modulated. Our phone line tonight, 415-762-1161, 415-762-1161. Last week we had Jonathan Elinoff on the program. You know that we here at X Squared Radio try to stay as positive as we can. So when it comes to the subject of conspiracy theories, we wanted to take that tack as well, and that's why we had Jonathan Elinoff on the program. His website is newworldorderreport.com. His film is called Core of Corruption, like Apple Core of Corruption, and you can look that up on Google if you want to. The reason we had Jonathan on is he has a more analytical, a more positive, a more hopeful message with the conspiracy theories than many of the other fear brokers out there. And so we had him on X Squared Radio, and I've got to say we got a lot of mail from that program. We also have extended an open invitation to Jonathan if he comes up with any new discoveries relative to the New World Order or to the Bilderbergers or to any shall we say, military pharmacology empire news that he can call in, and we'll break that news right here on X Squared Radio. He has an open invitation. It's not that we're trying to get in the conspiracy theory business, but you, as the listeners, need to know there are forces out there working, and we want you to be prepared in a positive way so that you can exercise whatever consciousness, whatever abilities that you have to try to counter it. Let's see what Scott has to say. Scott from Daytona, you're on the program. Welcome.
Hi, Dr. Brooks. I wanted to talk a little bit about skulls since you had brought up skulls. I have a collection myself.
Oh, really?
Yes. I have quartz, aquamarine, lepidolite, chalcedony, and two smokies. And I've worked with each of them. What I have to do in order to work with them, what they do is that they are like a gateway to the unconscious and the future self. According to what I've learned from Lazarus, Lazarus has a video out on skulls and Ancient One crystals. There's a technique that I use to work with them. It's basically to get to a meditative state or to sleep by one or get very deep in meditation so that one can, quote-unquote, commune with it. From having done so, I also shoot my consciousness into it through my right eye into its left eye, and then I wait for it to shoot its consciousness back into my left eye from its right eye. And one can ask questions. One can say, the way I do it is pretty much set out, oh, I'm going to go do this. And then it will say something in return. And then I'm going to go do that. And then it'll say something in return.
Are these like yes or no answers? Like, I wouldn't do that if I were you, Scott. Or is it more detailed?
Sometimes it's a flat out no. Sometimes it's more colorful, and they'll might use a phrase. Like, for example, there was one time when I was not sure where I was going with my career, and I was perhaps asking for some guidance or something, and I heard, tie up loose ends. And what was going on at that time that I didn't know was that I was getting ready to change jobs. And it was and I heard this, about 2 months before the new job appeared that I changed to. There have been other times when I've been meditating, but I think the quartz, I got this from the most recent one. The most recent one is the large quartz. It's the largest one of the bunch. It is rather, how shall I say, it has a sense of humor. When I'm meditating with it, it might give me the sensation that someone just squirted water in my face or make a face like Casper the Friendly Ghost or kind of like blow its face up. Like, you know, its cheeks up in my face or something. It's rather probably the most lively one. The aquamarine is more having to do with the ocean. In fact, that's when I was tuning into the aquamarine skull, it was more like I was talking to someone who was piloting a boat across a great ocean. And, you know, it was very caring energy. But the sense was that we were going across an ocean with the aquamarine. The chalcedony, I've slept by that one and sometimes have awakened to it talking to me. They do talk, particularly at nighttime. So some people might not be able to sleep with a skull near nearby because it has a rather intense energy. But I can sleep through a thunderstorm, so they don't really bother me that much. But lepidolite appears to be the more quiet of the bunch, but it does talk occasionally. It's more of a soothing energy, lepidolite. It's good for anxiety. Chalcedony somewhat, too. Aquamarine is known as the stone of courage. And then the Smokies are sometimes foul-mouthed. I've had that issue with Smokies before. It's to the point where I almost want to get more citrine and quartz, because the thing with Smokies is that it will hold negative energy. I'm not talking about the skulls plus the other Smokies, that they can hold negative energy and then they'll spout it back to you. And I had a Smoky generator once that I had just purchased and laid down to meditate next to it. Next thing I heard all this profanity and I was thinking, what in the world is this? So, in any event, the Smokies tend to be pretty practical. So when it comes to jobs, I often ask them about jobs. They're also good for manifestation in general, the Smokies, provided you're not distracted by something they might say that might be foul-mouthed. In any event, I have a group with me, and they're just a few of my collection. But I just wanted to share with you my experiences with them. And that might be an inspiration to others to work with skulls if they so desire. They can be quite chatty. To sleep with them near you when you're sleeping, they might wake you up in the middle of the night, or you might hear them upon awakening when you're really in a relaxed state.
Now, you just let these sort of resonate at their own energy. They sort of pick up from your personality or your consciousness whatever energy they need to reflect back to you what you want or what you need or what it wants to say or what it wants to exude to you. Have you ever tried, stimulating them another way, putting them near a power source, putting them in the sun,
yes.
Putting multiple people holding hands and then touching it or something like that. What happens when that occurs?
In terms of the sun, yes, I've been keeping the quartz in the sun this week. I haven't so much worked with it since that time, but I was thinking, give it some sun. I do use grids. Melody has written several books on crystals. I think she resides in Washington State. She has a book on crystal grids where you can lay crystals out on the floor. I've integrated the skulls into the grids, where I might have a sun grid or a Mars grid, or and the Mars grid looks like the symbol for male, and the sun grid is a complete circle. And right now I'm using a pentagram grid, which is about 50 crystals altogether. And I have noticed the grids help work with the skulls, but it's kind of like the skulls are going to exist outside the grids anyway, because I think most of the other crystals I have are generators, and, the skulls are in a realm unto themselves. And it's almost, sometimes I think it's almost like an insult to put them in a grid, but I have three books on
well skulls. The crystal skulls don't play well with others. They're kind of individual, sovereign energies.
Yes, they're definitely above the rest. I have three books on skulls, and one's by a Dutch writer, and he has several grids where he will have, the skulls all in a circle and of various sizes, with perhaps the dominant ones in the four directions, north, southeast and west. And I pretty much, when I use my grids, I point them toward the north, because I told that that's the best way to get them aligned with the magnetic forces and so on and so forth.
And, that's interesting. How did you acquire the skulls? Did you go shopping for them? Were they brought to you? Did you discover them in a store somewhere? Did you go to another country?
Yes, a few of them from, let's see, the Pitalite and the Chalcedony I got at Lazarus Workshops. They sell crystals and skulls at the workshops there. The quartz I got at a store in New Smyrna, and he sells crystal. He has, I mean, huge citrines and quartz. I mean, we're talking about 2 feet tall that he sells in his store. And he brought some back from Tucson, I believe, last year. And I walked in, and he had a labradorite and a quartz. And I tested out the quartz, and that was. I use a pendulum for testing when I go into a store looking for quartz, to see, you know, not only its own personal energy, but also asking the question, is this the one for me? I don't presume that any quartz is supposed, or any stone is supposed to be for me. I ask before I buy it. I got the quartz there. I got the aquamarine at the store here about, it went out of business, but it was a good little store in Holly Hill. That was about 9 years ago, 8 years ago. And I got a Smoky in that store, and I got another Smoky down at another store in New Smyrna. So pretty much around in this area, I guess they just came to me. I've been interested in getting the Nebula Stone, because there are two people who know where the Nebula Stone supply is, and they have a website. If you go looking for Nebula Stone, it's expensive as all get out, but they make skulls out of nebula stone, and they are said to have a lot of power. That,
now, what is nebulous? I'm not really a crystallogist or a geologist. I don't know what nebulous stone is.
Nebula. It looks like a nebula, and that's where it gets its name. It's a black stone with green dots on it.
Ah.
And it is, I bought a small piece of it, like a gem, like a tumbled stone, and meditated with it. And I could sense, I could see where they get the name Nebula Stone, because I felt like I was communicating with someone far away, like another galaxy, and well, not necessarily another solar system, another galaxy perhaps. And that was several years ago, but I'm inclined to find more nebulous stone, because it, like I said, I think it does have some kind of perhaps extraterrestrial origin. The Elestials have extraterrestrial origin. I have a friend who reads them. One of my Elestials, he came and read and located its home as being in Colorado, New Mexico, there along the mountains there somewhere. And he's been reading my stones for some time. The Elestials are also known to be extraterrestrial. I picked up one Elestial from what was called, there was a store in Orlando. They had a whole, like a airplane hangar full of crystals and stones, and I bought an Elestial from them, He's now working independently and supplies stores in the area with a lot of quartz and celestite and smoky. With that, it's, you know, there. I also have a huge citrine that's rutilated, and it's.
Now, citrine is a light yellow stone that
yes.
is reported to have gold in it.
Yes, it's the benefit of citrine is it holds no negativity. Citrine and kyanite are the two that do that. They say labradorite and moonstone also to some degree, but citrine and kyanite are the two that will not hold negativity. That that you know, if you are in a bad mood, it won't affect it. Whereas if you're in a bad mood and you want to work with that, you put the bad mood in the smoky, and then you go to the citrine to get cheered up. Or you can put the bad mood in a black tourmaline. It will also absorb negativity. It's important to wash them, too, after they've absorbed stuff. But the citrine, rutilated citrine, is five-sided. So there we go with five again, the pentagram grid that I have now. It's five-sided. If you laid it down, it would look like the Pentagon. In that it's and it has a back to it that has holes in it that you can kind of put your fingers in to kind of feel its energy. Whenever there's rutilation in a quartz, that also amplifies whatever energy is in the quartz. And it also
Interesting.
Keeps the negativity away from that quartz. Any kind of rutilated quartz, whether it's just plain quartz or citrine with rutilation, we'll do that. But I'm trying to, like, the ones I'm rounding up now are, I like the rough ones that have not been polished, because their energy is more, I think it's more pure, the energy.
Though the polished would be, say, more aesthetic, the rough cut ones, the ones that are sort of sandblasted on the outside, have a more pure energy?
I would say. And, you know, I like to see the triangle still there and things like that, because that lets you know that it's a record keeper, that it does have information stored in it. And to sleep by them, I feel like there's, you know, it's when I do sleep by them, whether it's a desert rose or a quartz cluster or a skull, I feel like it's telling its life story. It's telling, you know, it has its own story to tell and its own personality. And they're very individual and very unique. Even though you may go to a store and see 50 spheres, and they all look alike, they are unique. And
I have heard
one time
that
I was buying spheres.
The crystal's time, depending on what personality they've been in the possession of, what caretaker they've been in possession of, what kind of consciousness.
At one time
they
may come from Lemuria, they may come from Atlantis. The ones I get, some of them, so you know, I have several Lemurian seeds, quotation marks, meaning supposedly they come from Lemuria, or they were planted by Lemurians, and may be planted in a cave in Brazil or somewhere, or what is now a cave, but I have several of those. One citrine Lemurian seed, which is very rare. I found that at a store up in Flagler Beach, Palm Coast area, where I wasn't expecting to find a citrine Lemurian seed, but they are very, very beautiful, and as like I said, they don't hold negative energy at all. And the kyanites, you can put like kyanites around a particular stone or crystal to make the negativity go away. It's a way of cleansing it by putting kyanite, pieces of kyanite, around a quartz that you want to purify in whatever way. I mean, some people take them, you know, to the beach, some clean them there. Some people, you know, of course, using salt water in the ocean or using salt water in the homes, or some of them bury them in the ground. You know, I prefer to use water and just wash it that way, lukewarm water, and that helps to keep them from getting sticky, because sometimes they can get sticky.
By the way, those people that are listening that don't think that there's any value in any of this, I want you to stick around the next hour. Scott, will you hang over with me after the break?
Sure.
We'll talk a little bit more about it. One story just before we go to break here that I remember was a guy stopping in a rock shop in Arizona you know, you go in there and you find these bins full of various rocks that have been gathered and tumbled and poured into a big bin that you can buy for $2 or $3 a piece. And he's going through this bin, and of course he happens to be a gemologist, and he raked a handful of stones into his hand, took them to the counter, bought them for, I don't know, $15, $20. A short while later, you read in the news where the man had discovered a 50-carat ruby. It was worth about $800,000. The store owner sued to get part of that money, and it was struck down in court because the store owner did not know the value of the stones he had in the bin, and the gemologist did, and he made a fair purchase, and so the store owner was not entitled to any of that. Realize that the store owners where you buy these things, and you'll find rock shops all over the place. Various people get involved in them. You may find one in a locksmith in Greensboro, North Carolina, and you find another one in a hardware store in Greeley, Colorado. They don't really know what they have, but if you know what you're looking for, and next hour Scott and I are going to talk a little bit more about the value and the rarity in some of this and the origins of it, and what it could mean in your life. And believe me, we need all the help we can get. Stick around. We'll be back with more X Squared Radio in about 6 minutes. beyond belief and disbelief lies the vast expanse of ecstasy, where the mystic lays his head on the cushion of truth. Mevlana Rumi, music by Lisa Gerard, from The Dead Can't Dance, Dead Can't Dance. Had a lot of mail recently on our bumper music. We really appreciate that here on X Squared Radio. We try to bring you the best. Those of you working at your favorite workstation on your projects, we'll try to keep up with your imagination, keep your brain working so that you can create the best possible work. We realize that takes a lot of different stimuli. So rather than fill it up with commercials, we fill it up with interesting music for you to think by. Also want to let you know the Ark of Millions of Years trilogy is on sale. You can get it at arkofmillionsofyears.com. Our warehouse is just now getting the books back in. So as soon as we get back from the frozen wasteland of the north, we'll be getting those out to you. Thank you for your patience. It has been an interesting year, 2009. Many, many challenges for people. The unemployment rate in some places as high as 17%. We're wondering, where is this economic recovery? The economic recovery is in you. Realize this no matter who you work for or what you do. Whether you're waitressing or whether you're building satellites, you are in business for yourself. You are your own security. One more little tidbit of thought before we get going with our second hour. Listen. The open heart's window, and keep looking at the beloved. The task of love is to open that window so the heart can be illuminated by his beauty. Gaze incessantly at the beloved's face. That is your power, my friend. Make a way to the core of yourself and banish all other perceptions. You possess an elixir. Treat yourself with it. And by this alchemy, you will turn your enemies into friends, thus becoming beautiful yourself. You will be able to reflect the beloved's beauty. We'll be back 40 seconds with more X Squared Radio, second hour. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. Don't go away. Rumi is a great spiritual writer. We often use his work on this program. All right, we had Scott with us from Daytona. We were talking about crystal skulls in the last hour, and there's some uncovered ground here with respect to crystal skulls. You've heard, maybe various hosts talk about them and their energies, and perhaps it's a little more empirical data that we're going by. But keep in mind, there is a science to this. There is a resonance. There's a power. There's an energy that goes with crystals. And it has a lot to do with where they're found, how old they are. And realize this, crystals grow. They actually grow, especially selenite. It grows just like an organism. And it is in resonance, in entanglement with the earth, with the frequencies of the earth. And some of these crystals, like moldavite and others, actually come from other worlds to earth. They fall as meteorites. And they bring their own energies, their own entanglements from distant parts of the solar system and sometimes even the galaxy. We're talking about crystals and crystal skulls with Scott. Welcome back, Scott.
Thank you. Went out on moldavite. I tried on a moldavite necklace in a store once. I didn't buy it because it was pretty expensive. It was like $300. But the moment I put it on, I felt this uplift, very powerful uplift from putting on a moldavite necklace. And it had like Moldavite all throughout, like Native American style necklace. With selenite, I've had some interesting experiences with selenite, both the white logs of selenite as well as gypsum, which I'd mentioned briefly before. They help with dream recall. And in fact, with the gypsum, I picked up two in Casadega one afternoon and placed one on each side of the head of the bed where I sleep. And I had a dream that night of flying. I think it was probably Northern California. I was flying over the coast looking down at the rocky cliffs. And perhaps, I don't know, maybe they were... Maybe there was a message there. Maybe I need to travel there, or maybe that's where they're from. But that dream was in color.
Yeah. You know, I often travel around and do a lecture from time to time, and it's kind of amazing the rooms that people put me up in. Sometimes I say, look, I'd rather not spend in a hotel. If you've got a room that has, you know, some special... crystals or plants or special meaning or has a good view or something, I just soon spread a mat out on the floor and partake of that energy. And one of the places that I visited had a massive geode. This thing must have been, I don't know, 6 feet tall. Unbelievable energy from this thing. I don't even know how to describe it. I was doing a production run. Actually, I was developing a piece of energy technology that had been lost for, oh, probably 45 years, and it was found in a crate in a warehouse and purchased by this gentleman who understood what it was and what it was claimed to be. And I got a chance to uncrate it myself. I took it apart, wire by wire, piece by piece. It was a very interesting piece of technology. And I had to chart all of the circuits because there were no schematics or anything on this mid-70s technology, mid-60s technology. And the interesting thing is I got kind of tired because it was hot and it was dry. I was out of my environment. I wasn't sleeping well, which I never do when I travel. And so the owner loaned me a medallion that was made with almost golf ball sized piece of Moldavite. It was a rough green and black kind of clump. It wasn't carved, it wasn't polished, it was just wrapped in some copper wire and hung on a medallion. And I don't think I slept for 3 days. That was really an amazing experience. It wasn't like it gave me energy. It's like it never let me get tired. It kept me so focused on what I was doing. It was really amazing. Have you had a similar experience?
In terms of wearing them, not so much. But, I mean, there are times when, like I think I mentioned before, they can, like the skulls can wake you up, if like at 4 in the morning, because they'll start talking. And then you're getting less sleep that way, and it is kind of like a high when you're adding another skull to the bunch you already have. It is an intense kind of experience that, and like I said, I think the quartz skull has the most personality and seems to want to play tricks every now and then, and I suppose they're trying to get me laughing. But I also buckle down with it and have asked questions of it sometimes. I also ask objectively in terms of making note cards, writing answers down on note cards, and I may have 50 possible answers to a question, and then I'll use the pendulum. I'll turn them over, shuffle them up, use a pendulum to figure out what information is accurate. With the skulls, back to them, Lazarus had mentioned in his video that on skulls and ancient ones that it was the last sinking of Atlantis where they were dispersed. and they went in all these different directions. The skulls, and that's where they're now found in all the different places after the sinking of the third civilization, the islands that it had remained after the continent had broken up in the second civilization, and after the end of the first civilization, there was a river running through it that became a channel that divided the land into two, supposedly, one area that was never developed and the other that was. The northern part was not developed, from what I understand, the southern part was. I want to throw in bronzite too, because that's a particular intense stone in terms of helping make decisions. And Diane Stein wrote a book and suggested that men do well with this stone in terms of helping to gain inspiration to make a decision. If there's any confusion about making a decision, the bronzite, and that's bronzite. Another stone that you can find in a store and not have to pay too much for, but makes an interesting meditation stone. I have noticed if I wear red coral, if I'm angry about anything, red coral will let me know. If I'm wearing red coral, that one will bring out, whatever anger that might be. That's my experience with it. Black tourmaline, to have black tourmaline around is helpful. In fact, no one will break into your car if you have black tourmaline. Now, I have a tiger eye hanging from the rearview mirror because tiger eye is a good sunstone. It's a connection to the sun as well as also protection of travelers, and that's kept me safe when driving. Where I've almost been in several accidents, but for whatever reason, something stops it right before you would be in an accident. And I attribute it to the tiger eye. And I've had that pretty much hanging from the rearview mirror since, for about 5-6 years now.
Well, I know some people don't really attribute much to stones, but let me give you a couple of examples. The ancients, Abraham, Moses, others used various talismans, different stones, different combinations of metal and wood and stone. You often hear of temples being made with stones like jasmine and quartz and aquamarine, tourmaline, diamonds, pearls. It's not so much the gems as it is the qualities. If you go to Tibet and you look at some of the stupas that are built, especially in the bottom of the Patala, and I realize that you haven't had access to that. I was, I guess, lucky enough, fortuitous enough to be on a tour with a very good Tibetan guide. And we were in the Patala, and there were chains across all the doors that led into the lower parts of the Patala. The Patala was the largest building in the world up until about 100 years ago. It's positioned at 11,500 feet in the root chakra of the Himalayas. And the Tibetans built these stupas as transport devices for the souls of Panchen Lamas and Dalai Lamas, who could come back and also go out away from the earth through a four-dimensional stargate. The stupas made with about 4,000 pounds of gold and 10,000 gemstones. And the cocoon, which is where the soul or the body of the Panchen Lama is interned, is encased in sapphires. And sapphires are well-known resonators, even in NASA. We now use nanotechnology to make sapphire bearings for rocket engines because they're immensely smooth and have no friction to them. There are also examples of devices, like, for instance, in the Book of Mormon. In the very first Book of Nephi, there is a device that's delivered to Lehi, who is the old patriarch that leads his family out into the wilderness prior to the destruction of Jerusalem in 600 BC. They opened their tent one morning, and delivered at the door of their tent is a brass ball of what they call curious workmanship. It has needles in it. It has what we would call today maybe an LCD screen in it. And it operated not off batteries or the wind or the sun. It operated off of consciousness. If the individuals in the group were righteous, were positive, were loving toward one another, it functioned. When they became angry and jealous and vindictive against one another, it shut off. This was a relationship that was well documented in the Book of Mormon, and quite strange to other, shall we call them, Christian sects who never heard of such a device. But now, you know, Scott and I are talking about crystals, which go back to the very beginnings of the Earth and maybe the beginnings of the terrestrial areas where these skulls were found. Now, keep in mind that the land mass of the Earth, it dates back some 4.5 billion years old, some of the surface area around 2 billion years old. But the sea, the ocean floors, the oldest ocean floor in the world, is only 70 million years old. Some of it as young as 10 million years old, and some was made yesterday. So we have a planet that has been going through evolution, has been going through metamorphosis for billions of years, and now we are on the Earth, 7 billion people strong, and we feel that we're blind. We feel that we're disconnected. We feel that we're going along with no guidance whatsoever. For the past 300 years, we have fought all myriads of wars based on religion, guided by one god or another. And I would say that the information or the resonance or the calming or the, shall I say, the resonating energy that can be given to a person or passed from one person to another, one generation to another, or even more importantly, from the earth to humans, is perhaps exactly what we need these days to try to tie together a peaceful resolution to how we're going to live on this planet. I rarely hear, if ever, of crystals being used to conjure up violence. They're always used to calm, to give answers, to provide some kind of binary answer, which I can tell you, crystals can do. Yes or no answers, positive, negative answers, maybe, you know, pure knowledge. We have had some mathematicians who have talked about dream states that they've received, pure mathematics. Engineers do this all the time. Those of you sitting at your workstations, you know exactly what I'm talking about, late afternoon, after lunch, when you're in that zone between sleepful and wakefulness, and those special ideas come to you, those special solutions. If you've had that happen, by the way, call in and let me know about it. But I would highly suggest putting on your desk, especially under your CRT or around your mouse pad, some of these crystals and see what happens. Small ones at first, maybe some tourmalines or aquamarines or citrines are kind of inexpensive to get into, and they're pleasing to the eye, or some of the more complex stones like Scott is talking about. So that kind of gives us a more scientific, more historical background to what these, I won't call them talismans, what these instruments, what these storage devices can be used for. So, Scott, what has been your experience with other people who have, say, doubted what crystals can do, say, during massage or during meditations or during dreams or sleeps, sleep time, where crystals have turned the skeptical into at least a quasi-believer? What is your experience with that?
I think in terms of working with other people, I've done brief workshops in stores and so on and so forth. And some people came in not knowing anything, and then, you know, I brought in a whole bunch of things for them to experience. I wanted to make it as experiential as possible, so I brought about 7 pieces, an opal, an obsidian, some tourmaline, I believe, passed things around so people could feel them. And some of the people there created a website as a result, and then answer people's questions and made suggestions for people if they were feeling this way, what to use, or feeling that way. Because they can be very therapeutic. One, like I was saying, if one is depressed or down, you can put that into like a smoky, and then, you know, move on and then conjure up joy and happiness from holding the citrine. If one's anxious, the black tourmaline, the lepidolite, those can work very well in terms of pulling out negative energies out of oneself and so on. And then it's also very grounding. I'm very Neptunian in my makeup, where I tend to be Neptunian as in spacey. So I need something grounding. I need, like, black tourmaline. And sometimes I'll wear that, or watermelon tourmaline. It looks just like watermelon. It's green on the outside and pink on the inside. Watermelon tourmaline is like a good balancing stone between masculine and feminine energies. Using that, or wearing an aquamarine. I used to wear more of the Native American, the whole bunch I have still, but they tend to hurt the back of my neck some because the tumble pieces are a little jagged. But in terms of the others, you know, some people who are very grounded can wear amethyst because they're already grounded. People who are like Capricorn and Virgo tend to be very attracted to amethyst, and they can work with amethyst without it making them feel like they're floating off the planet. Whereas with me, I don't do well with amethyst in that way because I'm already there. I'm already kind of, amethyst is very spiritual, so you're dealing more with the etheric energies. Whereas if you're grounded already, you know, one can use the amethyst and the citrine and not be unfocused or starting to get spaced out, starting to feel like you're floating away. I had another experience with a dowel. I have a quartz dowel that I was using in a grid, and I put the dowel above my head, and I was laying on the floor with it above my head, and in the middle of the meditation, I felt myself being dragged across the floor. And I even moved my head to the side, thinking that my head was going to hit the wall. So I think that was kind of, from what I've learned of experiences like that, it was like I was getting ready to have an out-of-body experience, where some of them will do that. You might have an OOB, if you have something pointed up away from you, if it's pointed down toward the top of your head, that's more of a grounding. Whereas if you have it pointed up away, it may take you out of your body. And in order to ground, a lot of crystal people suggest to have the smokies pointed, like have smokies at your feet pointed down so that your energy pulls down instead of up. So you would point them away from your body, the smokies, if one needs grounding, and so on and so forth. So, you know, it's kind of like a balancing act, because when you're in meditation, you're going into the etheric, and it's real easy just to float away. It's like maintaining groundedness, but also having an etheric experience at the same time, trying to balance those two. One experience I had, went in a grid, I actually did have an out-of-body experience where I got up and walked into the next room. I was in one of the bedrooms, and I got up and walked into the living room, and there was no furniture in it except for 3 little quartz crystals on the floor. And then I came back into my body and regained myself. But they can facilitate meditation. They can facilitate healing. They can help people rebalance and recalibrate themselves. There was one Peter Zeit that I picked up at a store, and this is an interesting story because the owner of the store went to a show. She brought back two Peter Zeit spheres, and one of them was very pretty, and I looked at it, and I was like, how nice, and the other one was very rough, and I thought, and the pendulum really liked the rough one. And she told me after I bought it that that when she was at the show, that she looked at that particular one and heard my name. So she was tuned in already to the one that was right for me, and then I came in with my pendulum and figured out, yes, here's a real pretty one. Yes, isn't that nice? But the one that was more rough, it was still a sphere but not as smooth, was actually the one that I needed to pick up for myself. Peter's eye is very beautiful. It looks kind of like a bronze eye, and it's brown, but it has a whole bunch of colors in it, reds and blues and so on and so forth. And one can
Some of the people that collect crystal skulls have said all kinds of things about them, you know, not dissimilar to what you've said tonight. And then there are the debunkers that come out and say, oh, you know, these skulls are way less than 3,600 years old. They were bought in an auction in 1943, like the Mitchell skull was purported to be. And they've done SEM on it and found out that it was machined with modern tools. And interestingly enough, none of the skulls that we researched or that Sci-Fi Channel researched actually came from archaeological digs. They all came from very mysterious origins. Now, some believers in mystical energy feel that the crystal skulls have a broad range of powers. They can be used to aid in divination and healing and even psychic communications. Others claim that they have refractive properties unlike other crystals. They are said to remain at exactly 70 degrees no matter what temperature they are exposed to. They possess spiritual auras that can be photographed, and I've seen some of those photographs. Some even speculate that when all the crystal skulls are brought together, it will bring about the end of the world. That was the book Skulls of Salvation that we were going to interview Linnea Lee about tonight. And I have a rose quartz myself that I keep in my pocket. It can get very hot, about 110 degrees in my pocket. I can make it so hot that when I hand it to someone, they swear I've had it in an oven. And I also have a malachite wand that has been used in healing from time to time. I think malachite is a well-known healer stone, but I've also heard that it's not for everybody. It has some properties that it takes a pretty strong, not really ego, but a strong personal force to be able to handle the malachite.
And from what I've heard about malachite, it can project your mood outward, meaning if you're in a bad mood, you don't want to wear it in the grocery store because you can project that. And I've also heard that rose quartz can do that, where it can project whatever you're feeling outward. It's a lot of people go with rose quartz for love. You know, that's like the inner child stone. It has that property in terms of conjuring up the love that one needs on a more deeper, or not deeper, but heavier way to go would pink tourmaline. Kind of like it has qualities similar to rose quartz, but then also grounds it because it's tourmaline. And then there's rhodochrosite, which I have some rhodochrosites, which are from Peru. They have an intense energy of themselves. Good for healing hurt. Sugalite is good for healing hurt. Let's see what else. Charite is also good for healing pain and I think a good anti-anxiety stone.
Oh, what about Jasmine and Bloodstone and
Bloodstone's very grounding, as well as some people just have wonderful, like I gave a little itty-bitty skull made of bloodstone to a friend. He said after he put it in his briefcase, the day just seemed, each day seemed to go better and better, and that bloodstone really did resonate with him. I gave one to my dad. He also, well, he chose one when we were in Virginia Beach at the Heritage Store. He chose a bloodstone. Jasper, also very grounding and protective, and there's a particular form of jasper that's also intense, just like nebula stone, that suggested the Dutch writer who wrote the book on skulls. He's talking about jasper and nebula stone. Hematite is also very grounding. I'm holding one right now. I picked this one up in Casadega, and it's quartz with hematite.
Jasper, redstone?
Jasper can come in lots of colors. It can you can get it in red. You can get it in yellow. Yellow's generally it's a good protective stone when doing travel, just from what I've gathered. Hematite's also grounding, as well as tourmaline. But jasper, you can get it in brown. You can get it in yellow and red. It probably comes in lots of different colors. I've seen it mostly brown. Like I have a brown generator that I could wear that I'm probably going to give to somebody else, because once you find the stones and quartzes, some of them are going to resonate and some of them not. Some of them might resonate better with someone else. Herkimer diamonds are kind of interesting too. They come from Herkimer, New York. There's a mine there, I believe. I have a little piece a Native American elder had given me as a gift of that particular one. Vanadinite is good for preventing overspending. If one tends to overspend, vanadinite, and that's with a V, vanadinite is good for helping that.
Well, let's put that one in credit cards. They should put that one in credit cards to keep people from overspending. And I think if we could get a tandem axle of that and take it to Washington and dump it on the lawn, that would be a good one too.
Kyanite, one can put kyanite, little pieces of blue kyanite. I also have green kyanite. That's pretty. Kyanite over one's chakras for cleaning the chakras, like just pretty much lay them, or one can use colored stones. I've done that from time to time. Generally, I use the larger grids where I fit in them, like the grids I'm talking about. When I talk about a circle or a pentagram or whatever, I'm in it, and it's taking up, it's about 6 feet in diameter, 6.5 feet in diameter. And the kyanites can help with cleaning the chakras, and the citrines can help with getting to that higher emotional place where there's more happiness and joy and enthusiasm and excitement. It's also good for people who tend to be ADHD, I would think, in terms of being bouncy and running around. People who tend to be unfocused and over here and over there and over here and over there and so on. That helps to ground and slow them down. Citrine.
I have a selenite ball that I leave on a quad, which is a four-way shape that's used in Tibetan meditation. It crosses the male and female energy, and it makes a nice mount for the selenite ball. Sits on. By the way, you know, you people that don't think any of this holds any merit, you just need to read the Old Testament again. You'll come across all kinds of stuff like this. You'll remember that Jacob used to have his dreams and prophecies while laying his head on, you guessed it, a stone. And that stone, the stone of stones, the scone of stones, is in the castle in Edinburgh. And it is the stone upon which every king of England and Scotland has been crowned. So don't think that it doesn't have a place in history and a place in the old religion, the old relationship between God and man, between prophets and God and prophets and man. It does have a place. And I don't know that it's being misused. I can tell you that it's prolific in every culture, in every land. And you can call it lore, you can call it soothsaying, but it goes back way, way, way back, even off-planet. Some of these crystals are purported to come from other planets and carry their own resonance and their own energy. Although they're quite rare, they do offer great support to those who know how to use them. And I can tell you, even if you don't know what they're for, put one in the ashtray in your car and drive around with it, or put it on your workstation under the stand under your plasma screen on your computer, and you'll be surprised. Go ahead, take some data. Go ahead, do a scatter plot. Do a cause and effect analysis if you like. You'll find that there's definitely an effect. And usually, almost always, it's positive. And that's what we like to bring on the program. Scott, it's been an absolute pleasure. You're a wealth of knowledge. I bought a book one time on, I think it was called the Encyclopedia of Crystals. I bet I read that thing for a couple years, and there's no way I could digest as much as you have brought to us in the last night. I really appreciate it.
Certainly. Thanks, Dr. Brooks, and have a good evening.
All right, you too. Earth Explorers, I want to leave the phone lines open because the main thing we want to do is to promote dialogue here. There are some things happening in the world, and they're happening so fast now. It's not just the weather. It's not just politics. It's not just governments. It's not global warming, global cooling. Sure, all of those things are happening. But there are things that are happening much more rapidly and which require a great amount of care. And it is not something that we should pass over lightly. It's not something that we should ignore. I have asked you in the past to turn off the national news. You'll be surprised how much more calm your life will become and how much more you'll get done and how much better you'll sleep at night. There are some propaganda events that are taking place right now that are really trying to change things, and I want to just kind of bring them to your attention. So when we start the third hour, we're going to ratchet this up a little bit and try to bring some of the modern events that are occurring and try to throw a little reality on this for you so that we can keep you going in the right course, make sure that you don't waste all of your energy. So before we do that, though, let's see if we can get, looks like Iklia from Florida. Welcome to X Squared Radio.
Hi, how are you tonight?
I'm doing wonderful. How are you?
Okay. Since you guys were talking about crystals, I just wanted to share my experience with them.
Sure.
I have an acupuncture practice. I practice acupuncture, and this is how I use my quartz crystals. Once the needles are in the patient, I hold the crystals over the needles, and depending on what that particular acupuncture point needs to be done and what the point is doing therapeutically to the patient, the crystal seems to know whether or not it should astringe, pull out, or it should tonify and send in a soothing consciousness. And it's really amazing because I've used cold laser on top of my needles as well, and my patients seem to prefer having the quartz crystal over the needle because the energy is so divine and so refined, and they end up just kind of falling into a nice trance. They just love it.
Absolutely. Now, do you use the same crystal every time?
I'm amazed at what it does.
Do you use the same crystal every time, or do you use a different crystal depending on what you think the patient needs?
Well, I have a couple of crystals. They're both quartz, white quartz, and what I do is when one of them gets really weak over a period of time, I will set it on the windowsill for about 30 days to absorb the sun and kind of recharge, and then I use my other one while that one's recharging. But in between patients, I let the quartz crystal sit in a bucket of ice cream salt for about a couple of minutes before I put it back out in the sun.
Okay. So you have an ion exchange going on between the crystal and the salt. You see, now this makes electrical sense, because salt is highly conductive and it's able to shunt away any stored charge that the crystal might have. And I really like your empirical data that your patients can tell the difference between the cold laser and the crystal. Tell me a little more about that.
Oh. Yeah, what's neat is, you know, the laser doesn't know what to do. But the crystal, because it's got a consciousness, it knows what needs to be done. And it does the job. It's amazing.
Well, depending on frequency of the laser.
The other gentleman that was on talking about the skulls, well, first of all, I want to say that because of my experience, I definitely believe that the crystal has a consciousness. But it seems like the skulls have a more developed consciousness, more of a personality. I just wondered why you think that might be true.
I don't really know. You know, I was thinking about that because I was doing a little bit of crystal research as I was putting together the interview for Lanaya Lee's book, Skulls of Salvation. Perhaps it is the shape. Perhaps it creates a certain resonance shape, a resonance cavity. I often wonder why the human skull is shaped the way that it is. It certainly isn't the most efficient shape. We are not predators, and yet both of our eyes are in the front of our head, which most predators have their eyes set in the front of their head to be able to see their prey. Most prey have their eyes in the side of their head so they can see the predators coming from behind them. And it's all, you know, natural selection, the survival of the fittest, as it were. Something about the human consciousness, the human brain, the human shape of the skull allows the resonance of energy in, I'm not going to call it the flesh of the brain, the gray matter of the brain, but the brain is more of a lens for the human consciousness. You can take twins, for instance, who have identically shaped skulls, identical genetically in every way, and yet they have different personalities. Certainly they're entangled because even their very DNA is a split, molecularly speaking. But they have different personalities. They have different consciousnesses that are inside their bodies, and they're being lensed through identical DNA. And over time, the genetics of the twins change because the resonance of the human, the being of the human, inside the human, changes the DNA in that person. So the skull may have a certain shape. It may have an association with the person who's handling it or observing it, because as you know, the observation effect definitely has merit in physics and in science. Maybe the observer looks at a skull differently than he would, say, a rock or a crystal or a wand or a ball. And maybe that is
right.
What it has to do with.
Right. Well, if what you're saying is true about the shape somehow absorbing the consciousness of that particular being, if we had a crystal, for example, that was carved in the shape of an animal, like a bear or a deer or a dog or a cat, would it then take on the consciousness of that particular being, that particular species?
It could, but, you know, then hand that to 100 observers and get them to record what they observe from that, some of them being highly attuned and known to know crystals very well and some not, and collect the data and see what you get. I really like your input because you're using crystals on patients who are there for an alternative form of medicine, which is acupuncture. That's a little bit different than massage, a little bit different than color therapy. It's a lot more invasive. But the fact that they can tell a difference between the crystal and the laser is quite enlightening. I like that.
Mm-hmm. And using it over the needle is really a little bit more powerful than just holding it over the body. And the reason for that is the needle acts like an antenna. It kind of pulls in the energy and pulls it down into the body. So the two things kind of work together to enhance each other. So it's really
interesting.
Cool. Yeah. Okay, so I just wanted to share that with you.
Well, I appreciate it, Iklia. That was very enlightening. Thank you very much.
Oh. All right, thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, Earth Explorers, about 5 minutes left in this hour. The phone lines are open, 415-762-1161. I also want to let you know that BBS Radio is highly cutting edge in the world of Internet radio. We're not just sitting around here letting everybody pass us up. No. We can take virtually unlimited amounts of listeners now. It's impossible to max out the channels. Also, you can now listen to BBS Radio, including X Squared Radio, via your cell phone. You don't even need to have an internet connection. I'm going to give you the number. It'll be on our website starting tonight. It's on the BBS Radio website. This number, put it in your speed dial, and anytime you've got some free time, you're sitting in a doctor's office or a library, or you're waiting in the parking lot for someone to get done shopping, put this number in your phone, and just about any time of day or night, you can tune in to BBS Radio and just listen via your Bluetooth or your cell phone. That number, 712-432-0075. This will get you access to all the live programming. It won't get you access to the archives, but there's live programming going on, and you want to listen in to whoever's on at that time, you can do so by calling 712-432-0075 and then put in the access code 3181-16. 3181-16, and don't forget the pound sign. And then you'll be able to listen. Now, nothing that you do will come out over the air. You're in a listen-only mode, but you can hear what's going on live. BBS Radio is doing everything they can do to expand the audience, because what is being spoken about and discussed around the world with some of the best guests in the world needs to be heard by everyone. It's free, doesn't cost you a dime. Dial 712-432-0075 and put in the access code 3181-16-pound, and you can listen live. I also want to let you know we have got back one of our favorite affiliates. I don't know if you've been a member of X Squared Radio for a long time. If you have, you know this affiliate. It's one of our favorites. It is 123 Inkjets, and we really, really appreciated having them on. We lost them for a while because of the service that they were coming through wasn't paying their commissions. I hate to admit it, but that's what it was. So they are now back. The banner will shortly be going up, and we have developed a one-on-one relationship with 123 Inkjets, and you can stop going to the national chains and buying those inkjet supplies. Those kinds of things can really, really add up. You know, you don't realize it, but you go through a couple of cartridges by the time you go through a ream of paper. It's about $80 to print that paper, especially in color. So 123 Inkjet solves all of that. It delivers right to your door, often free shipping, and every time you order, you get a chance to win a free printer. Very, very cool. Don't forget thearkofmillionsofyears.com. The trilogy is available for sale. You get the first two books in audio for free, so if you're not a great reader, don't worry about it. I read them for you. My fourth book has been sent to the agent, so very soon I'll be able to announce the title to you and where you can buy it. I promise you it's an easy read. It's a lot smaller than the other books. The other books are usually around 500 pages. We're trying to keep this one around 200 pages just for you. So we'll be back in about 4.5 minutes. Actually, 6 minutes, 23 seconds. Don't go away. We'll be back with more X Squared Radio after this. Lisa Gerard, Dead Can Dance. This is the host of Seraphim. Just to kind of let your mind melt into hour number 3, X Squared Radio. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. One of the things that we're going to try to keep you up to date on is what's happening in world events. Not so much the scary news, but we want to make sure that you're aware of your position, the things that you can do to make a difference. One of the headlines out right now is that ships are on their way to the Middle East with more firepower, more Patriot missiles, and the focus is on Iran. I have to let you know, I have a lot of Iranian friends, engineers, chemists with whom I went to school, and I can tell you that there is the people's desire is not to get involved in this way. If they are building nuclear power plants, it may be just to develop nuclear power for their country. Maybe they want clean energy. Maybe they're tired of burning their own oil, their own resources for power, and they want to join the civilized world and not be thought of as a third world country. I know you hear in the press that we have to stop the proliferation of nuclear weapons, that they're building a nuclear weapons-grade plutonium, which happens to be pretty much the same result as building a nuclear power plant. I would say that our press is perhaps less believable than the Iranians. I know it's a little hard for you to take, but if we escalate this into a war, because the folks down at Wars R Us are putting it together and trying to make sure that they've spent all their money wisely and not too much inventory on the shelves. You know, we have to use that stuff up so that we can make more, so that the military contractors can launder the billions and sometimes trillions. If you've heard us talk at the beginning of the year, that the new NASA budget for 2010 is $170 million, whereas the national debt or national defense budget is $1.03 trillion. $1.03 trillion. I know the news would have you believe we are at war. And maybe we are. Maybe we have a warlike mentality. Maybe we're on a warlike footing. If you go to Washington, D.C., you will certainly realize that we are on a warlike footing once you see the hydraulic barriers that are set up around Pennsylvania Avenue with the ability to make the city literally tank-proof in a matter of minutes. We can prevent traffic in Washington, D.C. from accessing Pennsylvania Avenue. Giant bulldozer blades sunk into the streets around Pennsylvania Avenue. At a moment's notice, they can press a button and barricade off those streets. Nothing. No automobile can make it through to Pennsylvania Avenue. It can completely seal itself off from the real world. So keep in mind that we are not here to fight. We are here to make peace. And if we could do a little bit to facilitate that here on X Squared Radio, we're going to try. Mark's on the line. We'll bring him on in 40 seconds. Don't go away. We'll be back with more X Squared Radio. Go to sleep this night. One night is worth 100,000 souls. The night is generous. It can give you a gift of the full moon. It can bless your soul with endless treasure. Every night when you feel the world is unjust, never-ending grace descends from the sky to soothe your souls. The night is not crowded like the day. The night is filled with eternal love. Take the night. Take it in your arms as you hold a sweetheart. Remember the water of life as in the dark caverns. Don't be like a big fish stopping the life's flow by standing in the mouth of a creek. During a night, the blessed prophet broke all the idols, and God remained alone to give equally to all an endless love. Rumi. Welcome to the program, Mark.
See you tonight.
I'm so good. I'm glad that you're here. We've begun the amazing and infamous third hour of X Squared Radio.
Well, I had a topic that I thought you might find interesting. Puma Punku?
Oh, yeah, Puma Punku, sure. Let's talk about it.
I've just discovered it. I didn't really know much about it. But it's fascinating. I think what I heard, it's 17,000 years old. And some of the stones there are even bigger than the ones at the pyramids. I believe some of them are up around 400 tons. Have you studied Puma Punku much?
Well, of course, from an engineering standpoint, one of the fascinating things is how in the world did they move the stones from where they were ostensibly quarried to where they are in place. We don't have equipment today that can move them. We have cranes that can pick up 165 tons, but it can only set it out 10 yards. That's it, 10 yards, and it has to have outriggers. It's a very, very complex rigging process to lift something that big. We're not talking 10 yards. We're talking miles and miles away from where these rocks were quarried.
Now, I heard they were quarried on the western shore of Titicaca. So they actually had to take these stones probably across the water. Is that correct?
That was my understanding, too. And keep in mind, you know, this is at 9,000 feet. There's not much air up there, and there are no marks on these stones where they were lifted and moved into place. And the precision with which these rocks are placed together, now a lot of it's knocked down now, but you can see where the lock and key is carved into the stones and how they fit together, and they used to even pour molten metal into those like a little hourglass lock once the stones were put together to keep them from coming apart. The precision is just stunning how this is put together.
Now, I've heard the stones are diorite and granite, and that it would take a diamond-tip blade to actually cut them. Is that true?
That's right. It would take a diamond-tip blade, and there was a guy who demonstrated that they could have used a forged copper blade like loggers would use, pulling back and forth across a log. And what they would do is they would sprinkle diamond dust into the groove, and then they would move the blade back and forth until they actually sawed through the stone. It's true, they could have done it this way. However, the saw marks that they have found in the stones are not straight. They're circular, which means they had giant circular saws. Some of these saws would have to have been 8 to 10 feet in diameter. That makes no sense whatsoever. These people had no capability of doing that. They didn't know how to make axles. They didn't know how to make wheels. Absolutely impossible.
You know, sometimes when you talk to people about these kind of things, it's amazing to me that it's almost like I'm talking to someone that's asleep. They just don't seem to get it. They don't understand the implications. Have you ever experienced that?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, you give a slide presentation or, you know, this subject will come up one night. You're playing cards or you're watching a football game and it's halftime. And you turn the sound down and someone will bring up, hey, what about Puma Punku? And you go, oh, yeah. And you put it out there. They go, That's nice. That's nice. Hey, the game's getting ready to start again. And it goes right over their heads. They don't realize that these ancient societies, these ancient civilizations, were barely rubbing two sticks together to make fire. They were lucky to survive a winter. They had to pace their lives based upon the very short summer that they have in the mountains of Titicaca. And this is a very volcanic, very geologically active area. And yet, they survived. They blossomed. They proliferated. And some say it's because they actually had off-world visitors that came and taught them. You know, there's no known technology in all the ancient world that could have transported stones of such massive weight and size. The Andean people, and we're talking 500 A.D., this is A.D. after Christ, it's considered pre-classic. Their simple reed boats, that's all they had to travel with, could certainly not have moved them across the lake. Even today, with all the modern advances in engineering and mathematics, there's no way that we could fashion such a structure. How were these monstrous stones moved, and what was their purpose? Well, there's a guy, his name is Poznanski, I believe, if I got his name right, suggested an answer, I think, based upon his studies of the astronomical alignments of Tiwanaku. But that answer is considered so controversial, even impossible, that it has been ignored, and it's even been censored by a scientific community, get this, for 50 years. And Poznanski was the guy that I think really nailed how Tiwanaku and how Pumapunku and how these stones could have been moved across Lake Titicaca. It's phenomenal. It really, really blows my mind when you see structures like that. The Gate of the Sun in Bolivia. These kinds of things just defy all description. And you have to wonder, why was it built? Was it built with this blatant overuse of engineering to show how strong and how smart those people were? Or was it made to stand the test of time and show us how advanced they were? Or are we actually leaving a message for ourselves to wake ourselves up in this day?
Even the age, isn't the age tremendous? I mean, something that advanced at 17,000 years ago, how does the mainstream explain that? How do they rationalize that kind of age?
They really don't know. They rationalize it as though, well, something was going on and we don't understand it. Next slide, please. I'm up here in the frozen wastelands of the north this week because we're doing some crash testing on our electric trucks. And one of the things I was talking with some people from UNM this week, U of M, and I said, what does the university tell you about the ancient copper mining operation that was here, leaving out with 500 million tons of copper? And they go, what mining operations? Oh, come on! No, tell me you just don't know about it, and you forgot or something, because this was a major mining operation where copper was mined out of here pre-Bronze Age, not a small amount. This was a huge complex. They left some of their machines behind, corroded in the sand and in the lakes, but that mining operation existed here. The problem is that amount of copper isn't on the earth. It wasn't used in the Bronze Age. It wasn't used to make shields and swords and coins and decorations and things like this. This kind of ultra pure, we're talking about 99.5% pure copper, super bright copper, is missing from the planet, folks. It's not here.
Where was that again?
Well, this is in Michigan, actually. It's south of the lakes, and it's an area where the mining operation was so huge that to realize that there's no city there. You know, a mining operation that big would have taken 200,000 people to operate. I'm not talking about just the miners. I'm talking about the machinists and workers it took to keep the machines going, the people to cook the meals for the workers, the people to make clothing, the people to make housing, transportation. There was no rail. There's no navigable rivers in those days. There's no roads going to the coast where these things might have been loaded on barge trains and shipped across the Atlantic to various European areas. It didn't exist. It was a local area, but the strip mines are still there.
And how ancient are those?
You know, that's a good question. Some say they go back to the Bronze Age. Some say they go back much further, 35,000 years. Some say they go back to like 240,000 years. The hard part about dating this is when they were strip mining, they were cutting down through clay layers that have all of these geological time zones. And as they broke down through and got into this very, very pure copper ore, it disturbed the dating. So it's hard to tell where things were and what dates they were done. But the mystery is the missing copper. We're talking enough copper to, you know, basically pave all the roads in Europe with copper. The copper's gone. And this is not ordinary copper. This isn't the kind of copper that turns green that they made domes with in Istanbul, that they made forged tools out of in Egypt. This is an ultra-pure copper. It's considered bright copper. Jewelry was made out of it by Native Americans for centuries and was coveted by explorers that came here because of its amazing purity and brightness and hardness. But these are only trinkets compared to what was hauled out of there.
So it almost seems someone took it off the planet.
I think someone took it off the planet. It would be equivalent to stripping all the coal out of Kentucky and then realizing that nothing was done with it, that the soot from the coal doesn't exist on the planet. It was taken off planet.
That's awesome. Hey, I didn't want to stay on too long. I had one more topic I thought I'd ask you about. Have you ever heard of Norman Berggren, Dr. Norman Berggren? He wrote a book called The Ringmakers of Saturn.
No, I haven't. But if he's still alive, I'd love to get him on the program.
He may not still be alive, but his book is still available. And Bob Dean mentions him in some of his lectures. And the book is pretty interesting. I haven't read it yet. I'm reading one of Patrick Cook's books right now. I got to finish that. But Dr. Norman Berggren, I guess he was a research scientist at NASA and at Ames Research Laboratory, and he wrote a book called The Ringmakers of Saturn because in the Voyager 1 and 2 mission, evidently there was strong evidence that there were giant space vehicles in the rings of Saturn, either mining the rings or contributing to the rings being built. And there's actually some YouTube videos out there where you can see some of the images, and there's these massive cylindrical objects that are interacting with the rings in some way, but that would be another fascinating topic.
Yeah, I saw that, and these are like almost like cylindrical dirigibles, and they're so large that they're being picked up by the Cassini satellite.
Correct. Yes, absolutely. So that would be an interesting topic. And, you know, another person to get back on the show at some point would be Andrew Bisago.
Yeah, I spoke to him day before yesterday. He's got a lot going on, but we're waiting for his book to make a little bit further progress before we have him back on. I spoke to him for 7 hours last summer. I felt like the conversation could have gone on forever. It's just staggering how much information he gathered and how much he was able to recall of this incredible operation called Operation Pegasus. Just stunning information. And the stuff that, that he remembers about working with, or not working with, but actually being exposed to young Barack Obama and a young George Bush. And it's just interesting how long these people have been working with the government, how long they've been groomed since early ages for what they have done.
You know, another thing that he said that I found just incredibly fascinating that you could probably do a whole show on was that he said that there was a spacefaring civilization on the Earth 11,500 years ago centered in Cairo, Egypt, as well as Baalbek, Lebanon. Do you remember him talking about that at all?
Well, not on the air. He might have done it on Coast to Coast. We're going to bring him back on. I'm waiting for things to kind of settle down a little, but he's been going back and forth between L.A. and BC. So we're going to get him back on here pretty soon. I just spoke to him the other day. And it wouldn't surprise me the least about Cairo. You know, there are really lots of people. Most of the city of Cairo has never left the city. If you've ever been there, you'll know what we're talking about. It's so diverse. It's so big. There's so much going on in Cairo all the time. Gold merchants, some of the best engineering in the world passes through there. History, antiquities, it's just staggering what you can learn in Cairo.
Well, Dr. Agnew, it's always great talking to you, and it's been an interesting show, and I'll look forward to listening to the rest of it. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks, Mark. Welcome. Thanks for coming on the program.
Good night. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye. Earth Explorers, you know, one of the things that we want you to pay close attention to is all these technologies that we've on this program. We have various guests on talking about their books or their technologies or discoveries. That all of the California, and we're out in the frozen wastelands of the northern part of the country, right up against the Canadian border. And of course, it's a tropical paradise up here, just above absolute zero outside. I try not to say exactly how cold it is, because my very close friends that love the warm weather and hate the cold actually get cold hearing me talk about the weather and the AccuWindow forecast. We'll be up here till about the 11th, and then we're going back south again, and back to the foothills of the Appalachians, where we are continuing to build our electric truck plant. And we'll let you know a little bit more about that. Right now, we don't need to, because everything that we could possibly build in the next 2 years is already sold. So it's not that I need more sales, but I know that you're interested, and I get mail all the time about it, and we'll keep you posted. We have the website password protected, so if you want to have access to the website, you can always go to visionmotorcars.com and fill out the password request, and we'll give you access if you need it. We got some things going on that are really going to be amazing in the next 6 to 9 months, and you're going to enjoy it. Paradigm shifting stuff in new energy. Next week on X Squared Radio, we have Marshall Vian Summers coming on. He wrote the book Great Ways of Change. I'm struggling with it. I really am. And maybe you might want to tune in next week, because the struggle could be manifested live on the air. You know, at this in this program, the reason we named it X Squared Radio is because every number that is put into the formula or the function X squared comes out positive. We try to take a positive slant, a positive outlook, a positive solution for the negative things that we're faced with every day. We try to overcome these things as much as we can. Every once in a while, we discover something that is so negative, that's so dark and so foreboding and so doomsaying, that we just can't get it to come out of the formula in a positive way. this Great Waves of Change is just such a work. So I'm struggling with it. Let me work on it. It's not impossible. We can find a thread of hope in this yet. So next week, Marshall Vian Summers, his book Great Waves of Change. We'll have the February calendar page up tonight. So never fear. And we'll work on the 2010 guest list so that as you bring people to X Squared Radio, you can show them the guest list. Hey, look who was on X Squared Radio over the last 5 years. We have some of the best. We're also going to get Dr. Bruce Lipton back on. He just came out with a new book. He's taken a giant leap forward from his last book on molecular biology called The Biology of Belief. We're going to have him back on this year, too. We have a different Mark on line one. Welcome to the program.
Good evening, Dr. Agnew. How are you, sir?
Hey. How are you, my friend, down in Albuquerque, New Mexico?
Oh, just wonderful. Just wonderful. It's very nice to hear your voice and listen to your show. It's very interesting about the crystals and other wonderful items that can be used to enhance life.
Well, I mean, New Mexico is one of the epicenters of crystals in this country. Tremendous indigenous presence in New Mexico and ancient understandings of resonance and entanglement with the earth and with the human beings.
Yes, and I believe you experienced it when you were here, when we went for a little ride and experienced the wonderful resonance from the mountain right here in Albuquerque, which is granite, which is quartz, basically. So it resonates all the time. but so you're in the far north, and I don't know if it's any different from the weather that's in Kentucky right now.
Well, Kentucky is getting like 21 degrees and a foot of snow, and here it's just above absolute zero. That's Kelvin. That would be a minus 273 degrees C. Nothing's moving outside. No life whatsoever. I'm surprised that the double insulated glass is holding it back. It's very cold.
Yeah. Well, I just called in simply because I hadn't spoken to you since last week, I guess. But as always, I wanted to say how grateful I am that you are putting out this wonderful message of peace, because it's so important that people hear that and understand that it is possible, and it's what we're here to do. It's for us to manifest, and it's such a great thing to hear from someone who is grounded in science and understands the implications of not finding that resonance.
Well, the ramifications of not finding the resonance of peace in this on this planet is to repeat history and have the advanced neuro-connected human race once again slip into ignominy. We have a very rare opportunity here. Since 1996, barely 14 years, the internet has begun to connect the human race together. People can fall in love across the world now, 10, 15, 18,000 kilometers apart. They can fall in love, they can meet, they can communicate, they can share family stories, they can bridge the gap of prejudice, of darkness that may be sown by, I really don't know how to even term it. You know, when I'm in a country for myself and I'm meeting with the people, I'm experiencing the people, and yet I hear our national media talk about those people and strike fear in the American people, waving the American flag, beating the tribal drum, war, war, war. I'm going, what the heck are they talking about? Because that's not reality. That's not what is happening. And I can tell you the pontificating pinheads that seem to frequent our airwaves, be they television, cable, or radio, do not represent this people. Those 435 brainless wonders that are occupying what looks like ancient buildings in Washington, D.C., are children acting out their tantrums, trying to make themselves seem powerful. They no more run this country than the average preschool runs this country. It is a business, and it is run by bureaucracies, layers and layers of them. And it cannot be changed unless we, the people, realize that we are the ones that write the paycheck. We're the ones that are at the headwaters of all the money. And although I take my hat off to the Boston Tea Party or the Tea Party people, I want to caution them that our mission is not to dump the tea in the harbor. It's to sit down and have a cup with one another.
Absolutely, absolutely. And for anybody out there listening that listens to politicians, and you have a politician that says the government doesn't do things well, I don't think that's the person that should be running things, because we are the government. And we do things well when we're allowed to. And it's when people get in that have the obvious thing to make sure that things are snafu, to use an old military term, then there is no change. It is exactly that. It's snafu. But I communicate with people on a daily basis all around the world. And one of the other things about the internet, not just fall in love, but to share their inner love that they thought only they had. It's an amazing connecting tool that once the connection is made, it's shared. And I can tell you that there are people all over this world, also all over America and Canada and Mexico and Central America and South America, and just keep on going and going on, that are, as you were saying about people being asleep, that are waking up and saying, hey, other people think the way I think or feel the way I feel. Why are our governments this way?
I've found it in some pretty, well, I was going to say strange places, places that you wouldn't ordinarily suspect. You know, you go to what you consider a southern town, a small town where the accents are thick and you think the skulls are too, and you sit down and have some ham and eggs with these people and realize, hey, they're waking up in mass. It's beginning to occur, that event that we talked about, that gelling, that critical mass where helium, begins to freeze, so to speak. You know, Plato said, with you and other peoples again and again, life has only recently been enriched with letters and all the other necessities of civilization, when once more, after the usual period of years, the torrents of heaven sweep down like a pestilence, leaving only the rude and unlettered among you. And so you start again, like children, knowing nothing of what existed in ancient times, here or in your own country. That is, unfortunately, the people that have come to power, the rude and the unlettered. And they're beating the drum of Armageddon, and they're driving us down the path of eschatology to marshal our military and our pharmacological forces against one another. I can tell you, there's a writing in Across the Void. It says, When you find peace within yourself, you become the kind of person who can live at peace with others. Peace is not the absence of conflict, but the ability to cope with it. Everything is changeable. Everything appears and disappears. There is no blissful peace until one passes beyond the agony of life and death. And that was Buddha.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we used to often say, Mark and I share this all the time, the difference between the religious and the spiritual.
I read an interesting quote, and I'm not sure who it's attributed to, but it sums things up. And it basically says, if you fight the dragon, you become the dragon. And in waking up and finding that inner peace, you're no longer fighting the dragon. You acknowledge the dragon exists, but you give it no power. And
well, Mark and I often said when we sat around various round tables in various parts of the earth, the difference between the religious and the spiritual is that the religious are afraid to go to hell, and the spiritual have already been there.
Yes, that's very true.
When you've already been there, you don't want to go back. When you've been
right.
in war, you don't want to go back. You realize right. that all of these posters that are out there showing the glory of dropping out of helicopters, of wading through, you know, marshlands or rappelling down cliffsides, those people are carrying guns, and they're hired to do two things, kill people and break things.
That's true. It is very true. And as a person who served in the Army, I can tell you that you're not trained to save anyone except to protect your buddy, who is also there to destroy. And that's all you're there for. And you can wave the flag and whatever country. But a true warrior does not go to harm. He goes to prevent harm from occurring, and only uses force when force is necessary to defend. And it's been corrupted, like so many other things, to become something completely different. And but as I said, and as you have said, people are waking up, and this is what it takes. It takes that consciousness that it when even those that have been trained in this manner become aware and become conscious and say, no, no more. This does not solve what we're trying to solve. This does not bring peace. You cannot bring peace through war. You can only bring war through war. And I'm not a hippie. You're not a hippie. It's just the way it is from experience. And as you said, once you've been to hell and have left, you do not wish to return, because you've experienced that which no one should have to experience, but it seems that we as beings need that experience to understand that it is not the way to keep going. It's only a way to bring an ending. And so it's not an ending. That's the whole deal. And as many people as pontificate it and want to bring it about through religion or through national fervor, the bottom line is no. We've been down here. We've been there, done that. We didn't even get a darn T-shirt. And no, we're not going to do that anymore. And more of us.
There's so many great writings out there about it. There are songs. There's music. Another beautiful quote is, lead me from death to life, from falsehood to truth. Lead me from despair to hope, from fear to trust. Lead me from hate to love, from war to peace. Let peace fill our heart, our world, and our universe. And that came from Satish Kumar. So I could tell you that he's an Indian. He's currently living in England. He's been a Jain monk, a nuclear disarmament advocate. He's the current editor of Resurgence, founder and director of programs of the Schumacher College International Center for Ecological Studies and of the Small School. His most notable accomplishment is a peace walk with a companion to the capitals of four of the nuclear-armed countries, Washington, London, Paris, and Moscow. By the way, that's a trip on foot of over 8,000 miles. He insists that reverence for nature should be at the heart of every political and social debate, defending criticism that his goals are unrealistic, he has said. Look at what realists have done for us. They have led us to war and climate change, poverty on an unimaginable scale, and wholesale ecological destruction. Half of humanity goes to bed hungry because of all the realistic leaders in the world. I tell people who call me unrealistic to show me what their realism has done. Realism is an outdated, overplayed, and wholly exaggerated concept.
And actually, the realists are the ones that have shaped that reality. It is only a reality because that is what is propagated. The reality is we each, as human beings, need food, water, shelter, and to share those things with love with each other.
And don't forget, each person...
That is the basic reality.
Right, but don't forget, you know, there's another side to that. The individual human being needs to have responsibility, too, that just because they have all the food they can eat, water they can drink, and a warm place to sleep, that theirs is not to multiply like bacteria to swallow up our world in consumption. That's one of the great worries that they have, that if they ship in tanker loads of rice and milk and foodstuffs to a people who have no education, who have no training, whose only purpose in life is to multiply. They don't learn, they don't produce, they don't dig the ground, they don't harvest, they don't learn how to filter water or how to keep food cold. This kind of proliferation is what destroys this planet. So that growth needs to be with restraint, or it needs to be with personal responsibility.
That's the word I was going to use, with responsibility. Yes, with responsibility. To understand that what is available is what is available and needs to be used responsibly and not overdone. And I understand that what they worry about, but one of the things that the breeding becomes is because so many people are in fear.
their instinct is to have 10 children so 2 can survive.
Right.
Where the formula breaks down is when all 10 children survive and keep that mentality. And then that's when you go from 300 million people to 1.6 billion people. I don't know if you've ever been to India, you'll know what crowded is. When you walk across a street in Bombay in midsummer, you'll know what crowded is.
Right. And, that's the conundrum, but once again, it's not up to me or a human being to decide who deserves to exist. And as you said, education and understanding and responsibility are all tied to it. By the same token, that isn't what's destroying the ecology. It's the greed of digging and raping the land for profit rather than sustenance.
Well, that's true. That's true. And it is all about consumption. It's all about consumption instead of living in harmony. Whether we're pumping oil out of the center of our planet and then shipping it to wherever, refining it and then burning it, shoveling it into our gas tanks and burning it, and I have to admit, you know, a lot of the raw materials, resources of our planet are being used and not replaced. And some have been mischaracterized. For instance, forestry. Forestry is farming. I know some places in the upper west that are on their third cuttings, and they're gorgeous, beautiful forests, healthy, vibrant, living resources, renewable, that we have. And there are other areas on the planet, not far in our own country, where we literally just dig up the earth, put it in trains, haul it to somewhere, and turn it into electricity. It's called coal. And coal is not very clean. It's made a heck of an industry for our country, especially Kentucky and Tennessee and Virginia. It's a great resource. But we are nearing the end of that technological usefulness. We're ready to move beyond that. So the few miners that are supported by coal could also be supported by advanced technology built in those same areas.
The town where
we are building our electric truck plant has not had a new manufacturing facility in 15 years. Those people are about to get great-paying jobs, not shoveling coal.
And they're being educated to perform that work, I assume. So it is tied to education and taking a responsibility to do that and to change the status quo. I mean, if you're a miner all your life and you say, well, I can't do anything but mine, and you don't have a mine anymore, well, then you limit yourself. So someone who says, well, wait a minute, I need to do something, and they're going to be building electric cars. What do I need to know to do that? And let me find out and learn how to do that. And there, you know, that you're offering something that's beautiful to help the area, and you know, it's going to be very successful. By the way, you already know that because of your sales.
Yeah, hopefully there are 20 companies just like ours that are getting ready to start in this country, create a lot of jobs, and eliminate a lot of gasoline powered vehicles. Mark, we're plumb out of time again.
Well, thank you so much for taking my call, and I'm sorry I took up so much time, but so wonderful to speak with you and share.
Hey, no problem.
A wonderful time. Stay warm up there in the upper north.
All right. I appreciate your call, Mark. Thanks.
All right. Good night.
Good night. So there you have it, Earth Explorers. We just keep building the program. This year we're going to have a lot of the very best guests back on. Some of them have created new works. Andy Baggiago, we'll have Dr. Bruce Lipton. We're going to have Gary Schwartz back on. He's finished a new book. Lots of great, great stuff happening. Like a shadow that does not permit us to jump over it, but moves with us to maintain its proper distance. Pollution is nature's answer to culture. When we have learned to recycle pollution into potent information, we will have passed over completely into the new cultural ecology. William Irwin Thompson. We'll see you next week on X Squared Radio.
X.
It has been a great pleasure to have you here with us this evening. Tell a friend about us, because every Sunday evening at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, we bring you the best 3 hours of exploration into the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. If you're not getting all 3 hours, send us the call letters of your local station, and we'll do the rest. Remember, Earth Explorers, that you are Source. Everything we do will eventually affect the universe, so try to do it on purpose. Reach out for the good in people and help it to grow a little every day. And before long, you will have saved the planet. This is X Squared Radio saying, peace, Earth Explorers.